Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
The subject of tonight's talk is the highest attainment. We should aim to do the best we can, is it not? Do the best you can with your life. What's the best thing you can do? We should not simply be mediocre. So what's the best thing? What's the best thing we can do? Just the Olympic Games are finished, so how high you can jump, how fast you can run, how quickly you can swim, that has been tested. And the best runners, jumpers, swimmers have got their gold medals, and 4 years later it will go on again. So what's the best thing we can do with our lives? Be as rich as Bill Gates, Steve Jobs. Be as powerful as who? Who's powerful? Obama is powerful. Well, some people say Hitler was very powerful. Obama's not so powerful. Hitler had a lot more power. Then, be as beautiful as Fill the Dotted Lines. I don't know who's the latest in the Hollywood scene or Bollywood scene. Who's the great
Ashwarya
Rai. Ashwarya Rai's finished a long time ago. No, you're more out of date than I am. Anyway, whoever the latest Ashwarya Rai is, there was Rekha, Sridevi, and when I first came to India, it was Rekha. Now she's, no one ever heard of her now. So that's the point. What is the highest achievement? To be beautiful, famous, wealthy, boom, gone. How old are you, sir?
Me?
Yeah.
I am 73, about to turn 74.
Almost 74 years old.
Yes, sir.
So your life is mostly gone.
I hope so.
Where did it all go? It's just, where does the time go? It's just a flash. We all do something in our life, but whatever it is, it's just a flash. If we just consider, how long do we live in eternal time? However great you are, Obama, big famous name. Of what? The most powerful country in what? Some little blob floating, and some little piece of dust floating around. That is the earth. And we take it very seriously. Who won the World Series? Baseball. Don't know.
San Francisco Giants?
San Francisco.
Wasn't it?
I have no idea. I don't know. I'm from England. I know what baseball is. I just heard of the World Series. If I saw people playing, I wouldn't even know what the... I've heard of a home run, but I know what it is. So, but...
People take it... 2 years ago, I'm sorry.
People take it very seriously, right?
Yeah.
If you're a great baseball player, you can hit the ball and run fast, and everyone cheers. But what is it all? What's going on here? We're tiny little beings on a tiny little planet, and our span of life is just boom, like that. And why do we take it so seriously that I have to, Hare Krishna, that I have to run fast, or swim quickly, lift some weights, be very beautiful, be famous, be respected? Why should we bother? What is it that's urging us? Why do we not feel satisfied simply to, I guess, just to live? Or why even to eat? Why do we want to eat? That seems like a silly question, doesn't it? If we don't eat, we'll starve. But why are we concerned to live even? Why should we do? What if this body is only chemicals, then why should we be concerned to maintain it? What's the answer to that? The answer is that we're not chemicals. That is the answer. Otherwise, where does this feeling come from? I've got to do something, I've got to achieve something, I've got to enjoy something, I've got to show myself. Where does that come from? It's not from chemicals. Video recorder? Yeah. Camera. Some kind of camera. So you can program a camera any way you like, but it'll never have any personal volition. You can make a robot, a very simple robotic device. If you shine a red light on it, it will say, "I see a red light." But who is that I? There's no I there. It responds in a way that a human might respond it, but it's simulated. There's no real person in there. So where does this volition come from, to even exist, to want to, and not just to exist, but to do well, to do better than the situation we find ourselves in? Where does that all come from? What's the answer? Well, I'll tell you the answer. We are spiritual beings. That desire comes from the soul. Desire, a camera can never have desire, or ambition, or purpose, or even think about such things. A chair, a camera, can never have such things, because it's simply matter. And what is the body? Simply matter. And what am I? I am not simply matter. If I was, I'm not going to, but just as, for example, if I was to take this camera and smash it, that would be a minor criminal offense. If I was to take a human being and smash the head so that it was killed, that's a major criminal offense. What's the difference? They're both chemicals. Maybe it's more messy if you smash a head open, but that's not the reason that it's a major offense. The reason is because life is precious. Life is meaningful. These desires that we have, that I want to do more with my life than what I am now, that ultimately comes from the soul. Just like we see so many people from India here come to America. And it's not just the fact of earning money and what you can do with it, the prestige that comes with it, the feeling that, and now I'm showing myself to be a success among all the people that I was raised among, that's very prominent. It's not just the money earning, and what you can buy with the money, but the whole syndrome that comes with it, I've done something with my life. But ultimately, what is that you have done? You've earned respect from some people, and whatever you've done, whatever respect they accord to you, that will all be forgotten in due course of time. There may be so many big, powerful people. Obama, someone said he's very powerful. Yes, he's powerful in some ways, but there will come a time when no one has ever heard his name. If you come to this very spot, after some time, his name never heard. Or maybe someone in, that won't be Stanford University either, but if there's any educational institution, then someone somewhere will say, "Oh yes, there was someone called Obama." And then that also will be forgotten in the course of time. So what is it? Why do we care for attainments, prestige, status, or even survival? Because we are meant for more than this humdrum life. As spiritual beings, We are meant for more than simply existing. We are meant for simply existing, eating, growing old, dying, showing yourself to be better than others. We are meant for very high achievements, but we don't know, we don't have information about what we're actually meant for. We're spiritual beings. From the material platform, we cannot get information of who we actually are. Spirit, by definition, is different to matter. Material or materialistic scientists or empiricists, they deny the existence of spirit or the soul because they can't measure it by empiric means. This is foolishness, because the very definition of spirit is that it is not meant. If we take spirit, that means different to matter, and then if you can't measure it by material means and you say it doesn't exist, then that's foolishness. By nature, it has a different nature altogether from that of matter. We can measure chemicals, we can measure what their different the length, the breadth, the different forces within the atoms, the bonding between the atoms in the molecules. We can measure such things, but we can't empirically establish the existence of the soul. But to say it doesn't exist is ridiculous. Otherwise, what's the difference between me and you and a table? It's all made out of the same. The physical structure is all made from the same elements. But clearly there is a difference between a living being and a non-living entity. So the difference is the presence of the soul. Desire comes from the soul. Desire is very powerful force. This whole university with all its order, the freeways in America, the very existence of America as it is now, it all comes from desire, right? We have a desire to discover things and make life more comfortable. That was the original idea, to make life more comfortable by having freeways and cars and progressive life. It all comes from desire. It all comes from discontent that our present situation, it's not enough. We need to do more. So this all comes from the soul. Desire comes from the soul, that we are living beings, distinct from matter, and we want to make a better situation. So to make a better situation, make roads, make cameras, make cars, make political systems by which we can all live very peacefully together. Ha ha ha, it doesn't seem to work, but anyway, that's the stated purpose. So the desire is to make a better situation, but somehow it doesn't work. Why is that it doesn't work? Because this material world is not our proper place. Whatever achievement we may have, we all have to die. Whatever achievement we may have, we all have to suffer. The great athlete of today is the old man walking with a stick tomorrow. Years ago, I saw one. He was a sannyasi in India, and I was less than 30 at that time. He was over 80, and he told me that now I'm walking with a stick. When I was your age, I could pick up, he said, I used to be a wrestler, and I could pick up 2-3 men your size and just throw them to the other side of the room without any difficulty. But now, if I have to go from one place to another, I have to have a stick in one hand and someone to support me on the other side. So, time, we're limited by time. Time is destroying everything. But this desire to improve, to make things better. That is a natural desire, but applied to the material situation, it's misplaced, because everything here has to be destroyed. It's just the very nature of this world. Everything here is subject to destruction. Everything here is mixed with distress. We see that in America, all the big buildings and big ideas, the whole IT industry, which is prominent in this area, all runs on ideas, right? Mm-hmm. Think, okay, make something. But the whole idea is to increase happiness, but the ultimate result, somehow or others, doesn't work. I mean, are people actually happy in America? It's not empirically quantifiable, you can't. Well, actually there are tests which have been London School of Economics, and they've done happiness surveys just by asking people questions. It's not as quantifiable as what is the distance between Stanford and San Diego. It's not exactly empirically quantifiable, but by asking people questions, seeing their attitudes, their mental attitudes like this. So in some test like this, which was first done in the 1980s, this London School of Economics came up with the most happy country in the world was Bangladesh, which at that time especially was materially impoverished. And the United States came in somewhere like in the 40s or 50s. So somehow or other we missed it among all the technological advancement, with the desire to make a great civilization in which people live happily, something wrong in a society. I mean, I don't have to get into all the social anomalies of America, but everyone knows there are so many social problems here. Psycho people suffer from so stress, and so many psychological problems. And, I mean, any society in which you have to lock your door, there's something wrong with it. What do you think? If the people living around you, you can't trust them, that they won't come into your house and steal something, there's something wrong with it. But you can't imagine living in America without locking your door. In fact, people have guns also. It's not just locking your door, your gun also. There's something wrong with that. If the people living, you just can't trust them. You presume if you leave your door open, you're going to get burgled. And even if you're in your house, you might get burgled anyway, so better to have a gun. There's something wrong with that society. It's not proper. So what went wrong? The whole of America has been developed on the principle, let's make this a great country, let's make a model for the world. It was founded on noble principles. People are coming here for freedom of religion, and people should have freedom to express yourself, the freedom to do the best you can. Something went wrong somewhere. What is missing is clear understanding of who we are as spiritual beings. This Stanford University is one of the most prestigious in the world, but there's no department to answer the question, who are we actually? If we ask someone, who are you? They'll say, well, I'm American, and this is my driving license number, social security number, and this is my date of birth, and that's me. But who are we actually? Are we actually this bag of bones that can be just crushed like a camera can be crushed? Are we something more than that, than the physical apparatus which we take to be ourselves? which will be crushed in due course of time, inevitably. However much we do exercise and eat healthy food, the time's going to come when that's it, folks. It's all over for now. So we missed the point. America was founded on the idea of religion, that freedom of religion. But what is the underlying spiritual principle of existence? This should be understood. These universities, this point, they should investigate. They're doing so much research on so many points. Who are we actually? We want the best. Any person, unless they're a complete bum, they want the best for themselves and for others. What is it? Well, first we have to understand who we are and what our real needs are. Who are we? I'm an American. Okay. You're American. How old are you? 70, what did you say, sir?
Well, 73, about to turn 74. Almost 74. Next week.
Okay. So where were you? You're 74 years old. Next week.
Yeah.
Where were you 75 years ago?
75 years ago?
Yeah.
I guess I was in my mother's womb, perhaps? Or no. Oh. No, not yet.
Not yet. Yeah. So where were you?
Good question. I don't know.
You don't know. Where will you be in 75 years' time from now?
I don't know.
You don't know, you see. And there's a whole university here with some of the most intelligent people in the world, and they never even thought about that. They should have a research department. Where we all were 100 years ago, and where are we going to be in 100 years' time from now? But they don't even think. They presume, it's just presumed, that we are just some apparatus, like a camera, like, except more complex. But we're not. We are more. And that's why. If you smash a camera, well, you may have a criminal case against you. If you smash someone's head open, you're going to have it's a very severe criminal case. There's a very distinct difference between matter and spirit. We are spiritual beings. We have aspirations and desires. We are eternal. As spiritual living beings, we are eternal. We didn't begin with the beginning of this body. It's not just you put some chemicals together and all of a sudden you have a person with desires and aspirations, and the camera doesn't think, now I have to eat, or now you have to put some batteries in. The camera won't complain if you never put batteries in, because it's insentient. But if we don't get three times a day, we'll feel it. And I need some batteries. I need my batteries charging up. And so, of course, that is, the body is matter, but the desire to maintain it comes from the soul. And when the soul leaves the body, that's what we call death. And then the soul goes on. Where does it go? To another situation in which it attempts to find happiness and strives to be the best it can. If it's born in a dog body, then we try to be the best dog. If you're born in a tree body, then it strives to come up above the other trees so it can get light. So this whole striving to be in the best situation we can, that is natural. But in material existence, that cannot be fulfilled, because everything in this world is temporary, but we are, as spiritual living beings, we are eternal. Everything in this material world is mixed with suffering. And as spiritual living beings, our nature is to be always joyful, always happy. Everyone wants to be happy, right? It's axiomatic. No one wants to be. And even if you say, I want to suffer, someone might be a masochist. But even that is a perverse form of, if I want, means that's also a perverse form of pleasure. And no one wants to die, but we're forced to. And the body is forced to die. We are eternal by nature. We are blissful, by the way. We're meant for happiness, which is why we strive to create a situation in which we can live peacefully and happily forever, but it's not possible in this material world. But that desire is there because we are spiritual living beings. So the highest attainment should be to come to the platform of where we, that situation where we can be fully happy forever. That should be our ambition. But where is that? Is it America? Maybe we should go to New Zealand. What do you think? Too cold. Not as warm as California. What about... Some people go to Alaska. They think life is better out there. Where should we go? Not anywhere in this material world, because wherever we go, there is suffering, there is death. We have to find a situation in which we can be fully spiritual. Fully spiritual means a situation where there's full bliss and no death. We can live eternally in full happiness. So I may say, well, where is that situation? It should be there, right? If we have this strong desire, every living being has this strong desire to live, not to die, to be happy, not to be miserable. Well, that indicates that as spiritual beings, we are meant for happiness and eternal life. But it's nowhere in this material world. So how are we going to find out? We have to get the knowledge of that spiritual situation. How are we going to get to that situation where we can be fully happy? So we need knowledge. The universities, they should give knowledge. Actually, as he was just saying, the universities were founded originally in Europe. Of course, they had it in India also, Nalanda. But in Europe, the universities, what's that? Sorbonne, Notre Dame, Oxford, Cambridge, and others. They were founded as theological institutions. But later, they became atheistic institutions. So they were founded on the principle of raising mankind to the highest level of consciousness. That should be our desire. To come to the highest level of consciousness, which will carry us beyond birth and death, beyond having to get born again, having to die again, having to suffer again and again. So, for that knowledge, we have to take spiritual education. Many people think that spiritual life means just feeling spiritual. But there is knowledge of spiritual existence. It's not empiric knowledge. You can't measure the soul. You can't detect the soul in any microscope, however microscopically you scope. You can't see the soul, because the soul is by nature not visible in material terms. But that we are spiritual, we can all experience. That the very fact that we have desires indicate, and that we want the best, we want to be happy. We want not just for ourselves, but for others. That indicate, that shows that we are spiritual by nature. So spiritual knowledge, we have to get spiritual education, which means to understand, now I'm speaking in a general way, but to understand specifically what is the difference between spirit and matter, and what is that cultivate, what is that mode of life, what do we have to do so that we can get free from suffering in this world. In the last 20 years or so, in the West, particularly in America, the teachings of Buddha Being, Lord Buddha, have become popular among some people. So he analyzed the situation of this world, that this world is full of suffering, and suffering is caused by desire. The fact, he analyzed that the fact that we desire causes suffering. So his proposition was to stop all desire, and then you stop suffering. So that's good, but it's not good enough. It doesn't give the whole picture, because the very fact that we do desire indicates that inherently we are desirous beings. So simply to stop desire, to stop desiring the things of this world, will stop our attachment to it, which will stop our suffering, because attachment to this, the suffering in this world comes from attachment to it and desiring to enjoy this world. But the positive, that's the, okay, this world is, doesn't work. Okay, so don't aspire to enjoy this world, then our suffering will stop. But what is the positive aspect? Where can we place our desire in such a manner that the desire will be completely fulfilled, we'll be completely happy, and it won't cause suffering to ourselves or others, it won't cause repeated birth and death. That is spiritual knowledge that has to be learned. We have to, now just by discussing it in a general way, we can have a general idea that we are spiritual beings. But to understand in detail, to extricate ourselves from the tangle of material desires that cause our repeated birth and death in this world, then we have to understand what is our actual spiritual situation and how to become situated in that. As long as we have material desires, then we cannot develop our spiritual desires. What is the spiritual desire? Well, then we have to understand in detail what is our nature as a spiritual living being. So, I'll tell you, because I've taken spiritual education. So I should be able to say something, right? I mean, if it's not just completely vague that you imagine yourself to be spirit. But the situation is this. That we are spiritual beings, we are eternal by nature, we are meant for eternal happiness. There is a specific situation of spiritual action in a spiritual world, the spiritual world, in which we are all and we're meant to live there. And that situation, and this is the point which many people don't like, but this is spiritual knowledge. That spiritual situation is in service to Krishna. Krishna means the Supreme Spirit. He is supremely blissful. Krishna is never unhappy. If we connect with Krishna through devotional service, we also become completely blissful, because that is our actual position, constitutional position. Now we may think that the highest attainment should be that by spiritual development I should become God. Many people think like this. This is a foolish idea, because there's no question of becoming God. Or I shall become one with everything. But there's no question of becoming one with everything, because we're all individual living beings eternally. So the highest attainment is to attain that position where we can be eternally happy without any obstruction. That happiness should also not be a selfish kind of happiness or a harmful kind of happiness. There's a selfish kind of happiness one gets from dominating others, from giving pain to others, from exploiting others. But that's not actual happiness. The people who get happy like that, they're not actually happy. There's some sense of happiness that I'm bigger and better than others. But such people are not actually happy. They're full of anxieties. They're always in anxiety. Someone will come up above me. They live in fear, actually. The people we're talking about who's very powerful, the powerful people of this, so-called powerful people of this world, they're always in fear. That's why they want to show themselves to be powerful. They want to keep others down, because they're afraid that they will come up and exploit me. But in spiritual existence, there is no thought even of exploitation. How is that possible? Because everyone wants to serve everyone else, and there's no thought of what I can get out of others, because one is fully satisfied. So that is possible in relation to Krishna, who's the Supreme Spirit. Now, we could use the word God, but the word God has been so badly misused and misunderstood and has so many negative connotations. It's really better not to say that. It's better just to say Krishna. Krishna means the supremely attractive, fully spiritual, blissful, beautiful, sweet person, who love of whom is our natural situation, that's our heart's craving. Within the core of our heart, if we peel all the onion layers off our heart of material desires, desires for prestige, position, name, fame, we take all that off, what is left is not nothing. We take, remove all the material desires, there's no nothingness, but there's this strong desire to love. And the central point of love is Krishna. And if we love Krishna, then automatically we love everyone, seeing everyone in relationship to Krishna. So the highest attainment, we can say, is to be yourself. People like this say, be yourself. But they don't know who they are. And everyone's, they say be yourself, but everyone's imitating someone else, either real or imaginary. They're either imitating some real person, like who's also imitating someone else, so they're not really real, but they're imitating some film star or some Olympic star, or they're imitating someone completely imaginary, like Batman. That's even more stupid. The people they're imitating, they're also imitating some image of what they think they should be. And it just goes around in a big circle. Everyone's imitating everyone else. So be yourself, yes, but who are you? Who am I actually? Any professors out there? Can you tell you all the? They can tell you your pulse rate and your blood sugar and so many things. They can make a psychological test, but actually, who are you? Who am I? Am I this body? No. Am I this mind? Well, no. That's also changing all the time. Who am I? I am an eternal, spiritual, blissful, loving being with no desire to exploit or manipulate anyone, with love for everyone, with centered on Krishna, who is the supremely perfect being. So that's it. That's the highest attainment. Be yourself. Who am I? I am servant of Krishna. That's it. So now you don't need to go to Stanford University. You've got the highest knowledge. And there's nothing else to do except serve Krishna. Well, as long as we're in this world, we have to do something. So you can also get your degree and then another degree. And then what do people do after that? They become doctors and engineers, and some of them end up driving a taxi. Many degree holders who do that. Whatever. And then you die. But if you have knowledge of Krishna, then you never die. The body will die, but when I know I'm not this body, I'm eternally related with Krishna in love, then we go to Krishna, because we have nothing to, we have no desire to come back to this world. So then we go to Krishna, and that's the highest attainment. We go to Krishna, we never come back. We may come back just to tell others, hey, there's a much better place, why don't you come there? So that is the highest attainment. The highest attainment is to be yourself in pure spiritual happiness forever. That is possible, so we are informed by the great spiritual authorities over the ages. It's not something I made up. That is possible by Krishna consciousness. And what is that? Well, that's the subject of many other talks. Basically, it means to love Krishna. So, Hare Krishna. Any question, comment, process? Yes, please.
Should I speak loud or get a mic?
You have a good loud voice.
Do we have an extra microphone?
No, I mean, I'm not asking for it. Just whatever you...
I can yell.
I mean, I still have a voice.
Yeah, you're doing good.
Thank you.
Your body is doing good.
Well, a question is one that's been around me for a long time. Okay. Now, there are two human beings. One, of course, looks like his parents. The other one looks like his parents or her parents. But the question is, why, let's say, I am I in this body, and why another person is in the other body, and if somebody hits me, the one that feels the pain is my soul or whatever?
Ah, very good question.
Yeah.
Who or what experiences? Is it the body, the mind, the soul? Ultimately, the soul has no connection with matter. Ultimately, the soul that we feel. I don't mean to deter, but definitely something is felt. But that we can analyze that due to contact of an external object with the cranium, or the skin outside the cranium, or even the cloth outside the cranium, we feel pain. Who feels pain? What feels pain? We can say my B fibers are firing or something like that and make a neurological examination. But just like that example, you can make a machine which, when you shine a red light on it, it says, I see a red light. But there's no one seeing. So ultimately the soul experiences. Although the soul intrinsically has no relation with matter, because our desires are channeled through matter, then we assume an intimate relationship with matter. But ultimately we have nothing to do with matter, but we have falsely accepted a position within matter, and therefore we suffer, or sometimes we enjoy, but that enjoyment is very insignificant compared to the actual enjoyment of the soul.
Thank you so much.
Then anything else? Yes, please.
So the other question that grates on me and others, I'm sure, is why? Why does the material world that's full of suffering exist?
Why does the material world full of suffering exist? Because we are spiritual living beings and we are meant to love Krishna. I have to explain a bit more. What does love mean? Love means that voluntarily we give ourselves to someone. Love cannot be by force. As pull out a rifle, put it at your head and say, love me. That's not love. Love means voluntarily giving ourselves without any expectation of anything bad. Of course, Krishna does reciprocate. But we have the choice. Without choice, then there's no question of love. And the very fact that there is choice means there is the possibility of misusing that also. So for those who misuse the independence that to choose to serve Krishna or not serve Krishna, then we have this whole phantasmagoria called the material world, in which there's all arrangement to try to fulfill desires independently of Krishna, but it doesn't work. So this whole material world is here because of desire, misplaced desire, misuse of the independence we have to serve Krishna and be connected with Krishna, or to not do so. That's it. This material world is God's creation, yes, but in another sense is our creation also. Just like the government makes prisons. It's not that they want people to go to prison, but it's just understood that some people will misuse the facility they have of being a citizen of the country, and they require for their own benefit, at least theoretically, for their own benefit and for that of the good citizens, they require to be quarantined for their own benefit, so they can be, they can understand that I should behave properly. And the idea is they should come out and be good citizens. And for the benefit of others also, because for those who do want to live a peaceful life cooperating with the law and the government, then to have all these people who are simply, they don't care for civil law and order, to have them among you just creates chaos. So this whole material world is a prison. Reformatory center. What do they call that?
Correctional
center. Correctional center.
So then does it follow that if someone actually revives their love of Krishna, their Krishna consciousness, that and becomes fully situated in their spiritual real spiritual existence, then they no longer have to eat and sleep and grow old and feel pain or anything like that?
Those who come to the purely spiritual situation, they don't grow old, they don't die, but they eat, because that's pleasure. But it's a different whole. The whole conception of pleasure is different to that in this world, because this world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual reality. So, just like eating, let's think in this world. What's the real pleasure in eating? If you have great food, whatever you like, you put it on the menu, and you get the best cooks in the world to cook it, and you sit in a corner and eat it by yourself. That won't actually be very pleasurable, as if you have some very simple food which you share with your friends, right? So the real pleasure comes not exactly from the food, but from the sharing. So in spiritual existence there's certainly the pleasure of eating, but that is shared with Krishna, Krishna's friends, all together. So the food is very nice, no doubt. But the real pleasure comes in the sharing. So eating is certainly there in spiritual existence. There's no McDonald's. That's for sure. Yes, please.
Very quick one. When you were talking about the food and the enjoyment of the food But there are two sides to the coin. You have to defecate eventually. That is not my idea of fun or enjoyment. I have to do it, you know.
You have to defecate. Well, if you constipate for 3 days, you might find it enjoyable.
Thank you so much.
That's one of the great pleasures of this material world.
One question.
Yes, please.
How we can detach from the world, material world, and can increase in the relation to the God?
How can we become detached from this world and increase our relationship with the world? The answer is the same.
One thing is there in the Gita, Abhyas and Vairagya. So it is very difficult, I feel, how we can implement these two words, Abhyas and Vairagya.
Yeah, Krishna says it's very difficult to control the mind, but it is possible. Abhyas, practice, and Vairagya, detachment. So general detachment from this world is conceived of as just withdrawing from everything, just like going to a cave, and then gradually by yoga practice, start breathing very slowly and stopping breathing, even just keeping the breath suspended, eating practically nothing. So that is detachment by withdrawal. But there's another kind of detachment of living in this world and acting for the pleasure of Krishna, which prepares us for spiritual existence, which means to do everything for the pleasure of Krishna. So a better kind of detachment, rather than just trying to stop doing everything, is to act not for our own personal enjoyment, but to act in a manner that Krishna will be pleased. So that is detachment. That I can use everything in this world, but not for my own personal enjoyment, but I'll do everything for Krishna's pleasure. So that's detachment. That's the best detachment.
But not possible.
Why not?
I feel it.
You feel, but you're not right. Sorry. But according to Krishna, who is the greatest authority, it is not only possible, but we should all strive for that.
How can we
do it? It's very practical. Just like you have to eat something. As long as we have this body, we have to eat something. So instead of eating, so I can just eat and enjoy the flavor, and I will get my body strong so I can enjoy life. But we eat only that food which is offered to Krishna, Krishna prasadam. And we take that food to nourish the body so that we can serve Krishna. We have to talk about something. We're not just going to stop talking. We talk about Krishna. So in this way, we become Krishna conscious. It's practical activity, not impractical. If we think of detachment as we generally think of going to some cave, sitting in a cave, staring at the tip of our nose, that is practically impossible. That was Arjuna's protest. That it's so difficult to control the mind. But Krishna says, yes, it is possible. Asamshayam mahabaho mano du anigraham chalam abhyasena takontaya vairagena cha grihyate. It is possible. Krishna says it is possible. It's difficult, but it is possible by proper practice and by non-attachment. So it is possible. But we have to know the technique. And at the end of that chapter in Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna discusses this system of bodily mechanical yoga, Krishna says that Bhagavad Gita is yoga shastra, discussion of yoga. So Krishna clearly says, yogi nam api sarve shambhat gate nam taratma na shraddha vam bhajate yama sarva yukta tamo mataha. That the best of all yogis is he who with great faith worships me. So worship of Krishna automatically brings detachment from this world. If we're attached to Krishna, then we're not attached to this world. Simple process. Transference of our desires from the gross, the material, to the spiritual. Very simple. Do everything for Krishna. And whatever we do, we think how Krishna will be praised. Then automatically, detachment is coming. That is the practice. But we have to take it up. Now we're talking, but we have to actually act on that platform. That's called Bhakti Yoga, the yoga of devotion. Yes. Anything else?
Hare Krishna, what is? My question is, you mentioned that we have this material and spiritual desire, that is the driving force for us. So if we have that desire, then how this renouncing or detachment will make happy?
Yeah, your question is it's a rehash of the question that was just asked. It's saying the same thing in a little bit different way. It's the same common misunderstanding that detachment means to stop all activity. Detachment means to stop all desire. That's how it's generally understood. That's very difficult and very impractical. And it doesn't actually make us happy. It may stop the causes of gross suffering, but it doesn't bring us to the platform of pure bliss. So if we do everything, for all our activities, for the pleasure of Krishna, then that is practical, living in this world practically with detachment. So it's not just a matter of stopping or withdrawing from this world, but stopping to perceive this world as an arena for the fulfillment of my own personal desires. Real detachment means to give up personal desires and make all our desires for the satisfaction of Krishna. That's real detachment. Simply to try to stop desire is only it's a partial and incomplete process. So that's commonly thought, that we just stop everything, give up everything. But that's not even possible. If we think I'll give up everything and go and live in the forest, well, you're also living in the forest. You're also in the world. You can't give up. You can't stop breathing. You can't stop eating. And even if you're sitting on the ground, you're taking facility provided by God. So there's no question of giving up everything, because we don't own anything anyway. The idea of giving up everything is a thief's mentality. I think, now I will give up everything. But it doesn't belong to us anyway. But rather, if we think that, oh, so long I was thinking how to, I had this thief's mentality to try to enjoy everything in this world. Now I should understand that everything here should be used for Krishna's service. That is the purification of desire.
Krishna Prabhuji, I have a question on Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, where Lord Krishna is describing some properties of soul to Arjuna, and he says that the soul is, two of the properties are all pervasive and immovable.
Well, it is, the terms are sarvaga and achala.
Exactly. So my question is just a little bit more technical. Like, let's say I move away, go from this room to other room.
Well, wait a minute.
Is my soul moving?
Sarvaga and achala, these are the two terms. They appear to be contradictory. But But sarvaga in the case of the soul means that can exist in any situation. Doesn't mean I am not all pervading and nor are you. You are soul, I am soul, you are atma, but I am not all pervading. That's imagination. But I can end up, the soul can end up in various situations, in the water, in the land, on this planet, on another planet. So in that sense, the soul can enter anywhere within matter. And atala, immovable, doesn't mean in the sense that literally, but it means that our nature is immutable. The nature of being spiritual, that is unchangeable. Even though we are, in the present situation, we are covered by various bodies and various desires, and but our inherent spiritual nature never changes. So it's to be understood in this way. In understanding Shastra, we have to take help from the acharyas, for great authorities. Because as in any language, words are used in different ways. Certain words are used in different ways. And if we take the meaning of a word in the wrong context, then we misunderstand. There must be many examples of that in law, right? The law is written and the lawyer deliberately misinterprets it, and then they have to draft it all again. They have to be very careful.
Not just and the then, laws, and the contracts, then, the wills.
And then the judges have to interpret the law. After the law is drafted, the judges again have to interpret it. So, or the contract may come for under legal scrutiny and interpret it.
Only if there's any ambiguity.
If there's ambiguity, But actually, the very nature of language is that there's always some ambiguity. It's the very nature.
Otherwise, we would be out of work. What would the lawyers do?
So, that's why in the scriptures, the whole, it's meant to be explained by those who have realized it. Krishna spoke to Arjuna, Arjuna understood it. For others, it requires some explanation. I'll take one more question and we'll finish.
What about the argument that the free will is an illusion and that the choice, the desires are actually guided by nature's hand?
The argument that free will is an illusion and choice is guided by nature. That means absolute determinism. Then desire has no meaning. That's the idea, that desire is just an illusion and there's no free will whatsoever. Well, you can believe that if you like. But then when you're hungry and a plate of food is in front of you, you don't think, well, now if by fate it happens to jump into my mouth, I'll eat. But with your desire, you pick up the food and put it into your mouth, right? At that time, this philosophy doesn't work. We're just talking about defecation. You have to urgently run to the toilet, and you think that, well, anyway, it's all predetermined, so let me just sit here and poop in my pants. And it's not a practical philosophy, is it? Just to bring it to its absurd conclusion. Everything is predetermined, so there's no need to go to the toilet, I'm just pooping my pants.
So, yeah.
If someone says that to you, you can punch them in the face and say, well, it's all predetermined. If you don't be so gross, just take their wallet out of their pocket. And it's all predetermined. Don't complain.
Very quick one, very quick one. Micro question, if I may.
Micro questions can have macro answers.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's what I hope. Yes. Yeah. When you asked me some questions, the thought came to my mind of being this world, but not of this world. But then something came later. I said, being this world, but not of this world, be of Krishna. Does that make sense or not?
Yeah, yeah, it makes sense.
Thank you.
I just wanted to know. Serve Krishna. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.